New York and on the internet at WBAI.org. It is 5 o'clock. The program you just heard, Labrish with Haptah Selassie, will be back next week at 2 following the work of the Midnight Ravers. And stay tuned for Back of the Book right here.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. Well, okay, okay, we went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
It should be about 5 a.m., and you're listening to all. Welcome to another warm mid-autumn radio, WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
Indeed. And we're going to talk about various things, and you can find out a little bit more about those things by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. And you can go up there and you'll see a blue navigation frame on the left-hand side of your screen. At the top, it will say latest Back of the Book program links. And you click on that and you'll get to the webpage for this program. The WBAI website and the archives seem to be functioning. This is our 65th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program. A recorded program is not as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. And we start out with the big news of the past fortnight, since we've been off for a fortnight here. We were preempted last week. Yes, we are holding at 116 followers. Oh, man, it's so tremendous. And you've seen the news emblazoned all over front pages around the world. Oh. The next public WBAI local station board meeting is scheduled to be held on Monday, November 29th, 2021 at 7 p.m. on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. That one will be the final meeting of the 11th WBAI LSB. We thought this past Wednesday was going to be the last meeting, but no. And, yes, on November 29th, that meeting will be held in executive session, so you won't be able to listen to it. So we're going to have the WBAI, the 11th WBAI LSB meeting in executive session for its final meeting. And the 12th WBAI LSB will be seated on December 8th. And, yeah, we're going to have a delegates assembly before that, supposedly. Yeah, we have some bylaws amendments that people want the 11th LSB to vote on. I don't know why, since it's coming up so late, they can't say, okay, let the 12th LSB vote on it. One of them said, well, some of them won't know anything about it. Well, most of the LSB, the 12th LSB is going to be mostly the 11th LSB with some few changes. And most of the people on the 11th LSB also don't know what the hell is happening with the bylaws. Plus, when we had the meeting, I said, you know, by having a no longer operational delegates assembly in there, you're really endangering these bylaws amendments of yours. That's going to be seized on. So I don't know. People didn't listen to me. A majority voted, let's do it this way, and that's what we're going to do. So we'll see how that goes. And during the LSB meeting that we held this past Wednesday, the meeting got attacked by a bunch of jerks on Zoom. And again, this is another thing that Zoom is vulnerable for. They have people who hang around on it and look for open meetings, and they go in there and start saying rude things. And it wasn't political at all. It was just jerks. And, you know, luckily, two of the younger members of the LSB knew how to operate Zoom, and they shoved all of the they dumped the jerks. And when the jerks came right back on, they left them in what's called a waiting room. And I just said, you stay in there. You ain't getting out of that. And so that worked out. But, yeah, geez, what a mess. Zoom is really not that suited to this kind of thing. The LSB election results have been released. You remember I was talking about we had LSB elections and all of that, and last time we were on, I said, I hope you didn't vote for the so-called Justice and Unity campaign because they had all sorts of designs that were not good. And the results have been released, and the WBAI local station board is not very different from what it's been for the past 2 years. I got reelected as a staff representative, as did Saddle Pal Maxwell J. Schmid, and also Sean Rhodes, whom you will have heard here and there, and whom you will hear probably right after this program goes off the air. He also got reelected to the WBAI local station board. And I'll note that this is the first time we've been able to get all three slots taken by the good guys, as we are. So, gee whiz, that was a good thing. Maybe the staff is improving or something. According to the Johns Hopkins website, COVID-19 cases in the whole world reached 252,323,032 on Friday, and global deaths reached 5,085,486. In America, the number of cases as of Friday was 46,915,295, and the death toll in America had reached 760,768. So, 25,930 people have died of COVID-19 in America since our last program 2 weeks ago. That's an average of about 12,965 people a week. That's almost 13,000 people a week. And that's up from the previous numbers, all right. And from what I'm reading, COVID-19 cases are increasing in America again. And the head of emergency medicine at UC Health, that's University of California Health, Dr. Richard Zane said, quote, "We're watching a train crash in slow motion, and we know exactly what to do to keep it from crashing, but it keeps going," unquote. Yeah, what we need to do is get people vaccinated instead of taking ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and other quack things that are going on. Ugh. We know what to do, and we're not doing it. The state of Vermont, which has a lot of people vaccinated, the state of Vermont has seen a 55% increase in new cases this past fortnight. And ABC News has reported that Arizona, California, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Maine, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, Mississippi, Missouri, Nebraska, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Mexico, New York, Utah, Vermont, and Wisconsin have all seen cases increase by 10% or more over the past fortnight. That's a lot of states. And quoting here from an article in the Daily News, quote, "In Massachusetts, nearly 60,000 fully vaccinated residents have tested positive in breakthrough infections," and that was reported by WBTS-TV, "and 468 of those people have died." So the unvaccinated are having their effect on the vaccinated. Because, as we've pointed out before, it is known that if an unvaccinated person is surrounded mostly by vaccinated people, they're fairly safe. Whereas if a vaccinated person is surrounded mostly by unvaccinated people, that person is not so safe. They are, getting bombarded by the virus because these other people around them are getting it and they're unvaccinated and they're going to easily transmit it. And cases in Massachusetts have increased 44% in the past week alone. WBTS noted that the breakthroughs are just 1.2% of the 4.7 million people who've been fully vaccinated, and the deaths are 0.1%. So, again, people aren't dying of it, but they probably wouldn't get it at all, the vaccinated people, if they weren't surrounded by so many unvaccinated people. And Jesus Christ. One doctor, who's a professor of health metrics sciences at the University of Washington, his name is Ali Mukdad, told the Associated Press that, quote, Delta and waning immunity, the combination of these two have set us back, unquote. He also said, quote, this virus is going to stick with us for a long, long time, unquote. There's concern that the infections are moving out of the South and going north and west. And, of course, the unvaccinated people are still supplying the victims of almost all of the deaths. By the time this program airs on Saturday morning, all of those figures we've quoted will, of course, be higher. This was, again, all mostly preventable. And we're still seeing a lot of crackpottery going on with ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and I don't know what else. And a certain stupid football player got kind of famous in the past week or so by basically lying about having been vaccinated. Because in the NFL, the National Football League, you have to be vaccinated. Otherwise, you can't play or else you have to get tested a lot or something like that. And they want people to be vaccinated. And he said they had a press conference and he's sitting there with no mask on or anything. He's saying, I've been immunized. You know, which is like not a direct answer. That's not saying I've been vaccinated. And turns out he wasn't vaccinated. And exactly what he's taking, whether he's taking ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine or cow dung, or if he's just having people pray about it, all things people think are a better alternative to having a vaccine. He didn't say, so far that I know, exactly what he's claiming his natural immunity stuff is. But he got caught out in his lie this past week. And, oh, man, you know, people like that are so destructive. And he's not alone. There are a lot of idiots like that out there. And so, yeah, I'm immunized, you lying sack of disease. Anyway, so, and, you know, we've been talking about places like Florida and Texas where they don't seem to give a rat's zinger. And here's a story. So far, 9 employees of the Broward County Sheriff's Office in South Florida have died of COVID-19. The first one died in 2020. And I'm reading that COVID-19 was the number one killer of law enforcement officers in 20. And it's remained the number one killer of law enforcement officers in 2021. So, Jesus Christ, you know, maybe some of them could figure this out. And then de Blasio finally says, okay, we got to do something about stuff. And he says all employees have to get vaccinated or else. And loads of cops and firefighters said, no, we're not going to. I think this is mostly just a macho thing. And they said, no, we're not going to. And so he did it. He said, okay, you're suspended for now, and you ought to go get vaccinated. And as a result, a lot of them got vaccinated. It was like, you know, the reality came in. They weren't going to be able to bully them into not following through on this. And so there's that. But they should all be paying attention to the primary killer, the number one killer of cops in 2020 and in 2021 has been COVID-19. Duh. If there were some kind of bullet that was especially getting cops' vests defeated, they would be going nuts. They would be pulling out all the stops to do everything they could to prevent those bullets from being manufactured. And they'd go after the people who were, you know, selling them, and everything would be shut down. They'd really do that. But, you know, oh, go get a vaccination so you don't die. Oh, we're not going to do that. Yeah. Well, again, de Blasio did a rare good thing for him in saying, okay, you all have to get vaccinated now. And, yeah, that's a good thing right there. And New York Police Department cops have been dying of this since last year. They contribute to that metric of COVID-19 being the number one killer of people doing law enforcement. So, well, at this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is back of the book. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and I'm R. Paul Martin. And here we are in mid-autumn. Yes, it's the mid-autumn of 2021. And we've been in this for some little while here, and in a mere, less than 10 days, like, what is it, a week and a day from now, we'll be in late autumn. And, of course, we went to the dreaded Eastern Standard Time last weekend. Oh, the trauma. Yeah, I don't like the standard time because the sun sets so early. The sun now at 5 o'clock, it's dark out, and it's unpleasant to me. It's very unpleasant to me. And, you know, by 6 o'clock, it's as dark as midnight. And I like the sun to be up at 7 o'clock at the latest. And if the sun is setting earlier than 7 o'clock, I start getting, oh, boy, this is depressing. And like right now, this is like starting the worst time of the year for me because the sunlight is not what I really feel I need. And there's nothing I can do about it. I can't. I don't believe in saying a prayer and making the sun stop in the sky because the sun isn't moving in our sky. The Earth is moving in its orbit, and that's what's happening. And the Earth's moving at like 66,000 miles an hour in its orbit, and there's nothing I can do to stop that. And we're going to have to wait till it gets through to the spring sometime, and then it will be better at last. Or almost spring. Just before spring, we go to daylight time, and I will feel better about that. Yes, so we have that going on, and late autumn. That's really when it gets. Late autumn and early winter are basically the same thing, and the sunlight is just so depressing. And speaking of astronomical events, Pickles of the North has a little something to say.
Well, it won't bring you any more light, but it will be interesting to see.
It'll bring you less light, in fact.
That's right. On November 18th, 19th, depending on where you live on the Earth, but for, I believe, our part of North America, it will be November 18th, there's going to be a partial lunar eclipse. What makes this lunar eclipse special is that it's a lot closer to a full eclipse than a partial because it's, I believe, 98% of the moon is going to be in the Earth's shadow. Apparently, this has not happened since February 18th, 1440.
I remember that one.
You do? And it's going to be quite long. And it's, depending again where you are on the Earth, it's going to last for 6 hours and 2 minutes. That's a wowie.
Yeah, lunar eclipses last a long time because the Earth is a lot bigger than the moon. So there's a hell of a lot more shadow for the moon to pass through. Whereas with a solar eclipse, the moon is smaller than the Earth. And, you know, so it can't cover the whole Earth. But we can cover the whole moon if the angles are right.
Well, this will be the longest lasting partial eclipse, which is almost a full eclipse, since that date I just mentioned. And the next time
what is that date?
When it happened last,
yeah.
the last time this happened?
Yeah.
February 18th, 1440. The next time this is going to happen will be February 8th, 2669.
Mark your calendars.
And I believe, this is where we live, which, of course, is in the tri-state area, New York State specifically. The moon will enter the penumbra at 1 a.m., and then it will be in the umbra at 2:18, I believe, in the morning. So now it is going to be low in the western sky. So unfortunately, we won't be able to do our bedroom astronomy where we can just look out the bedroom window and see this happening. I think we might have to get dressed and go out.
So. Oh, my godlessness. I'm going to have to go out again?
Well, possibly. Or, hopefully it won't be cloudy. But so this is something to look for the coming week.
Yeah.
And it should be quite the sight.
Wow. So that's been... So it's been 581 years since this last happened.
Yes, I got this information from timeanddate.com, which is actually a pretty good website to go to and look at stuff. And especially you can get things very, very local information about astronomical events. But yes, they said that the Incas were building Machu Picchu at the time of this eclipse. I imagine they probably stopped and, had a ceremony.
Yeah, well, they were good enough to predict this kind of thing. So they probably dragged a few prisoners up to the top
of the steps
and said, "See that? Zip, right in the gut." So,
Now the one that's going to happen in 2669, they point out, is around the time that the fictional happenings in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure take place.
I never saw the movie, so.
I'm not giving anything away, but it is a very funny movie.
Okay.
So,
I will take your word for it. And we have that to look forward to. And then we have 26-something to look forward to.
2669.
Oh, man, that'll be really something. Yeah, 2669, why, that would be the 700th anniversary, well, the year, the 700th anniversary of my getting back out of the Army.
In the year 2669, our Paul got out of the Army.
No, I got out in 1969.
A long, long, long time before that.
700 years, so there you go. But, so we had Veterans Day the other day. And it was that I didn't go in any marching. And I do remember that the first Veterans Day when I was a veteran, it really didn't register at all because I didn't like being in the Army. I was against it. The war was, obviously all wrong. And it was horribly corrupt and all of that. However, I think it was the day after. I think it was November 12th or so, maybe the 13th, I don't know. Something like that, 1969, I went to an anti-war rally in Times Square, and Pete Seeger was there. So, yeah, I went to that, and I liked that better than being in the Army. Although when they said, okay, now everybody start picking up all the trash that's in there. We want it to be neat. We don't want them to say that we're doing dirty things here. And I said, I was in the Army up until 3 days ago. So I had a lot of police call, as it's called. That's what they call it. In the Army, it's called police call, where you have to go out and pick up whatever garbage is on the ground. And, so you get these lifers who throw their cigarette butts in the ground, and then the privates have to come over and pick it up. Ugh. Anyway, you get all of this stuff going on, and and so I decided, I'm not going to pick up the garbage in Times Square. Times Square was a very familiar place to me. at the end of 1969. It had been familiar to me because in the years before getting drafted, I'd been hanging around there a whole bunch. So I said, I'm not walking around Times Square picking up the garbage. So there was that.
Now, November 11th, the beginning of November 11th, of course, ended up being called Armistice Day, I believe, around the world.
Yep.
And it commemorates the end of the Great War, World War I. Later, it was changed. It's called Remembrance Day in many Commonwealth countries. And in the United States, of course, Veterans Day. And here we remember all the veterans from all the wars. The symbol for Veterans/Remembrance Day is the poppy. And I hadn't realized this is the 100th anniversary of the use of the poppy as this universal symbol now. And it was originally suggested by a lady named Anna Boulle-Guerin, who was from France, of course. She was a teacher, a lecturer, and she was inspired by the poem written by John McCrae, who fought in World War I. He was Canadian, and he wrote a very famous poem that's called In Flanders Field.
Yeah.
And in all the grave sites in Europe, poppies grew up in the fields and where the soldiers were buried, and that's why he used that symbol in his poem. And she used it in her lectures in 1921. She wanted to raise money because people were still starving in Europe. The war was very devastating, and she wanted to raise money for veterans and their families, and she used the poppy as a symbol for that, and they would make poppies and sell them to people, and that's who got the money. And she went around to different countries that year and got them to go along with this, and so that's the genesis of the use of the poppy as a symbol for November 11th. So I hadn't realized that, and I hadn't known that it's been 100 years. So
yeah, I think there's also something about the poppies growing in the battlefield. I don't know, but anyway.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, they grow. They grew in the fields. Yes.
Yeah.
So.
And the poppy isn't that popular in America. In America, it's not that well known. I know that at times I've worn one, and people haven't known what the hell that was. So yeah, in where you're from, everybody knows about it. In America, more people know about it than used to, but largely no.
And the reason is for that, of course, is because when you are a child, you learn about it in school. You learn about it in school. You will make your own poppy or draw a picture of it. So that's how I grew up knowing about it, and also my parents. So that's, and kids today too. So that is why it is. I believe people in the United States used to wear poppies for Memorial Day. That doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, a lot of this stuff, it's not in school anymore, and it's not taught, and we don't remember it. And yeah, there's that. I remember, I'm remembering now when I was a kid, a guy on Fifth Avenue in Brooklyn, and he was in a wheelchair, and he didn't have any hands. He had those metal clamps. It's just two things
yes.
that click together. And he'd hold out, not poppies, but teeny-weeny American flag pins.
Mm-hmm.
And he would be selling these because I guess he needed to. Right after World War II, you know, you could end up, having a rough time, even if you were seriously. He would have had certainly a 100% disability.
Yes.
But still, he had to, and other guys had to, try and sell these things when they could to make a few extra bucks.
Also, in New York City, there was a long tradition of the newspaper sellers, newsstands, were veterans, were they not? I believe.
Oh, there's an ordinance, I think, that gives preference to veterans for, food carts, you know, opening up a cart somewhere and that stuff. And it probably also may relate to newsstands, I think. So, yeah, there's that. A little history of something we don't see that much in America, really. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. And, of course, the January 6th, 2021 insurrection is still reverberating. So far, more than 650 people have been arrested for that. Unfortunately, from what I'm seeing, the sentences that have been handed down so far have been mere slaps on the wrist. 4 months for breaking in. This woman who says, oh, I'm white and I'm blonde and I'm rich or whatever the hell she says, and I won't get any, I won't go to jail or anything. And she's going to get like some tiny amount of time in jail. So, yeah, she'll go in, but she shouldn't be in there as some tiny thing. She should be getting 20 years along with these other people. And, you know, there should be a lot of those big felony sentences being handed out, but they're not. And I don't know why. As we've previously noted, the House of Representatives has voted to hold Steve Bannon in contempt of Congress, because he's been subpoenaed to talk to the committee about stuff related to January 6th and the insurrection, and he's saying no. He's refusing to honor the subpoena. Subpoena, of course, is Latin, and it means under penalty. And so, yeah, if there's no penalty, it ain't a subpoena. Anyway, so they voted to hold him in contempt of Congress, and as we've noted before, it would take a lot of time before he would end up in a jail cell. However, we are hearing, just as we were preparing this program, to us this news is like an hour or so old, that a grand jury has indicted Steve Bannon, and that's like the second step in all of this. There's more to go. And again, it's a whole lot of stuff that has to happen before he could end up in jail. But, yeah, the grand jury did it sooner than I thought it would. So Steve Bannon has been indicted for contempt of Congress. And there are reports coming out that various Congress critters met with some of the future insurrectionists before January 6th. And I think some of them gave them hints on where the vulnerabilities were. And the Congress people who met with the insurrectionists before they became insurrectionists promised them effective immunity from prosecution. Wow. That says guilt. That says knowledge that what you're telling people about and planning is a criminal offense. And, yeah, there are Congress critters who ought to go to prison for this as well. And in other news of certain people who are no longer a president around here, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit has issued an administrative injunction temporarily blocking the release of White House records sought by that House committee that's investigating January 6th. So they're investigating the insurrection, and they're supposed to be getting a whole lot of information. And Biden says, sure, you can have it. And so Trump has sued and said, oh, no, it's executive privilege. And you need my permission to let that go, and I say no. And Jesus H. Christ. So Trump has gotten this stall in. And, you know, so it's delayed. They were supposed to get it by Friday, which is today as we're recording. But they're not going to get that now. And so the injunction has been put in. And oral arguments will be held on Trump's lawsuit on November 30th. U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan had rejected those arguments on Tuesday, saying, quote, "Presidents are not kings, and plaintiff is not president," unquote. And she again denied an emergency motion by Trump this past Wednesday. So what he's doing is he's trying to run out the clock in hopes of having a Republican majority in the House that would dissolve that committee and sink the entire investigation, and he'd be home free in, we'll see, the election's 2022. I guess he would be home free, is it right away or in 2023? Anyway, that's what he's looking for. He's looking for like a year from now to be able to say, okay, we stopped that. I'm thinking up a T-shirt right now with that saying on it. Presidents are not kings and plaintiff is not a president. And I've got an idea for a graphic. I don't know. Could we possibly make some kind of a premium out of that? I don't know. I'll look into that. Anyway, in further news of this kind of thing, sad to say, the Log Cabin Republican Club held their annual Spirit of Lincoln dinner last Saturday. The Log Cabin Republican Club is gay Republicans, and I interviewed some of them, and I also interviewed the lone Republican Congress critter from Manhattan years ago, and we put that on the air when we were doing gay rap, I guess, at that point in time. And so that was the name of a program. And so I interviewed them and the Congress critter and all of this. And, well, they had their annual dinner last Saturday. They held it at Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago Resort in Florida. Now, this is a LGBT plus infinity group. And, you know, how are they having anything to do with this no good homophobic scumbag Trump? And their top honoree was Melania Trump.
For what the hell?
Yeah. Maybe for her jacket that said, "I really don't care." I don't know. I guess what's happened is, you know, it's politics. So I guess what's happened is just as Trump and his idiot pals have taken over the Republican Party, they've also taken over the Log Cabin Republican Club. They didn't used to be like this. They didn't used to be like this. But there you go. Yeah, Melania Trump is an honoree for a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, plus infinity award.
What for what? Do they say why they gave it to her?
I haven't seen that. I'm sure they probably have some rhetoric about it, but I haven't seen that reported. I've only seen it reported that this happened.
I don't remember her doing anything during that administration for gay people.
Here we go. Yeah, I certainly don't either. I mean, I don't know. It's, but hey, it's politics. Reality doesn't have to factor into it. One person at this event was quoted as saying that this was the first joint appearance of Trump and his wife in the buildup to his 2024 presidential run. You know, really. And he's, I don't know, how's that going to float with a lot of the other right-wing Republicans that he's going to this event? And he's, you know, this is where he's kicking off his campaign for 2024. Yeah, I don't know. You know, when the Log Cabin Republicans started up in the 80s, I said, well, okay, we are everywhere after all, and we should let everybody know. We should let everybody know that we're around, and even if you're a Republican, you might be in the same party with a bunch of gay people. And so, yeah, we are everywhere. And I don't know that the log cabin Republicans are doing us a favor, however, by signing on with someone who has attempted to overthrow the government in favor of a right-wing coup and who has overseen so many anti-gay things in his administration. I mean, this is the guy who made it so that, no, if you're transgender, you can't be in the army. And, you know, so the log cabin Republicans are showing themselves to be as big a bunch of whores as the rest of the Republican Party is. Oh, we think we might get favor with this filthy scumbag Trump. So we'll sign on with him and we'll fawn over him the way the other Republicans do. We'll be just like them. Well, yeah, and you're getting to be just like them. Ugh.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. He is R. Paul Martin, and I am Radio's Pickles of the North.
So here we are, and we were off for a week because we were preempted last week because of a fundraising special. And yeah, the thing is, we are weekly these days, and this is the anniversary of our going weekly. This radio program had been bi-weekly. We had been every other, you know, a fortnight between each program, and we had been bi-weekly, and we did that for 34 years, more than 34 years. And now for the past year, we've done this. November 14th of last year, we had our first weekly program. Sort of. Well, we won't get into how things sometimes go awry at WBAI right now. But so we've been on weekly for 1 year now. And also, it was 40 years ago this month that I finally accepted the invitation to join the WBAI Gay Men's Department. So November is also the month of my anniversary of coming to WBAI. And I came to WBAI in November of 1981. Why aren't you saying the exact date you came in, R. Paul? You know the exact date of every other goddamn thing you talk about. Well, because I don't know that date. A lot of the time I write things down, and back then I was writing stuff down too. However, I guess I was going through some things right around then, and all sorts of things were changing, and so I wasn't writing stuff down. I didn't write stuff down for a period of – from sometime in early November until about, I think, either January or February. I didn't write anything down, which was like almost unheard of, because I keep – you know, it's not really a journal. It's just notes, and I just keep things. I write things down, and I didn't do that 40 years ago because stuff, I guess, was happening. And also indicative of stuff happening was a little more than 40 years ago, I bought a very expensive shortwave communications receiver, and I was listening to shortwave a lot. And I also had started to grow a beard. I grew a beard. And one of the things I have since heard is that when a man is about to make a change, he grows a beard. It's not always like that, but a lot of the time a man will grow a beard when he's about to make a change. I don't know all the stuff that's involved with that, but that's what I've heard. And so I had grown a beard, and, you know, part of what it might have been about was that I was also having something else go on. 40 years ago, I was at a meeting of the Christopher Street Liberation Day Committee, which used to run the Christopher Street Liberation Day March every June, also known as the Pride March. And I was one of the people in that. And we were having a meeting in somebody's apartment. And after it, I found myself suddenly having politically incorrect thoughts about one of my lesbian colleagues. And so some changes were going on in my life then. And I think that was a part of why the beard was growing. And, you know, by the way, the buying the communications receiver, I got to tell you, I'm a penny pincher, and spending a good amount of my savings on a radio was bizarre. And then there was, you know, suddenly noticing her in a way that was politically incorrect, at least in the gay movement. And so, yeah, so that was happening there. And it was right then in that same month of November 1981 that I accepted that invitation and came to WBAI and was said, okay, now you're a member of the gay men's department. So I was in the gay men's department. I wasn't in it for more than a couple of weeks before WBAI management at the time dissolved it. And, you know, so there were all sorts of things. Are they getting rid of the gay program? There was a crisis among people and a lot of drama and stress. Oh, godlessness. Drama and stress happening everywhere, all over the place, constantly. And still happening these days. There's drama and stress about getting this radio program produced in time to get up to be aired on Saturday morning. So drama and stress is still there. And about now, sometime this month, sometime in November of 1981, 40 years ago, I also learned to cut tape. Cutting tape. That's how we used to edit things. We had these tape recorders called TRs. They used open reel tape. Mostly what we used were called Scullies because that was the company that made them. And for a while, when I was in the engineering department, I was in charge of all the Scullies at WBAI when we were at 505 8th Avenue, which meant I used to go around and maintain them and write down how things were and fix things constantly. And so anyway, we had tape. And the way you did it was, of course, when you do interviews or anything, you have to edit. And everything was on tape. That's how you recorded things. Sometimes you would go in and you would record right to open reel. Mostly I did cassette recordings. And then we would go into a room called Dub Edit. And we would play the recording from the cassette and re-record it all analog onto open reel tape. And then what you did was you took the tape and you found a place where you had to cut something out, like where somebody says, and I think we should kick their bleeping asses. Well, bleeping, of course, would have been a word, and you couldn't put that on the air because you'd get fined. We were still very new with having been nailed by the Supreme Court for the Carlin decision. So the place was sensitive to that. And so you have to lift that out. And also other things. You know, in doing an interview, you have to rearrange it. You cut out the parts that don't work right. And the parts where the guy is coughing or you're coughing. Yeah, we've cut coughs of mine out lately, all right? Anyway, so what you did was you ran the tape and you there are two big reels. Usually you had these two big 10-inch reels, and you put it across the tape head, and you move back and forth. It's called scrubbing, and because you're going back and forth. And you find the exact point where you need to cut it, and where you need to edit it. And what you do is, on the Scullies, there happened to be a distance between where the head was reading the tape and the edge of the housing of the thing that the heads that read the tape. And if you use the back of a razor blade, the smooth part of a single edge razor blade, and you rubbed it over there, you put a thin black mark on the tape. And you do that on the other side of it, and then you get it out, and there was a block, an editing block, a little aluminum thing. I have one of my own. I bought one years later. It's a little thing. It has a trough in it, and you lay the tape down and you line the tape up, that mark. You line that mark up, and when the line is lined up with a line on the block, there's another line that's a little cut in the block that's at 45 degrees. And you take a razor blade, now you use the sharp end of the razor blade, and you cut it. You draw the razor blade through that cut. And you do that for both sides, and then you put them together on that little block. You take the piece you don't want, you throw it away, and you put them together. You abut the two pieces, and they fit because they've been cut on the same angle. And then you take what was called splicing tape, and you put a little bit of that in there. And when you put it on, nobody can really tell that you've edited that thing. And that's called cutting tape. And it's something I still say I'm going to cut tape. I'll be cutting tape on this program after we get done recording it. And I don't know, it's just a thing that's just there. And oh my, this is an interesting idea that we're cutting tape and that we're not cutting it anymore, but I still call it that. It's sort of like on the Starship Enterprise when they listened to their tapes, because information was on tapes in 1966. And you see them take a piece of plastic and stick it into a socket, and they call them tapes. And, you know, I said then, oh, that's so stupid. They'll call it whatever it is. However, now we still refer to filming, and we still refer to tape. And we have neither film nor tape in what we're doing. It's all digital. So, yeah, Star Trek may have been predicting human behavior back then. Anyway, so I was in WBAI 40 years ago. And, oh, man, that was I learned a lot of things. I learned a whole bunch of things. We're going to talk more about this during this month. And, but sometime in November of 1981 was my first time at BAI, and oh man, I had a lot to learn, and I also had to make a decision on whether or not to do something I was asked to do that probably would have gotten me and everybody else thrown out. So, and I didn't do it, obviously. So, we'll probably talk about that. We'll talk about a rather bothersome person who was around at that time. All right. Well, I think that's it for Back of the Book for this week. Oh boy, it's been a year of doing mostly weekly programs, a few interruptions for preemptions, and wowee, there we are. We are going to be back here next week, and coming up next is
a fundraising special, and at 7 a.m., Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund.
And he'll have all sorts of science fiction topics to talk about on there, and maybe some recordings too. Okay, thanks a lot for listening, and we hope that you're all hanging out there and looking at the early darkness, and don't get too bummed out about it. You know, if you have something that will make it better for you, yeah, try to make it better. And above all, remember what that lamenting the early sunset dormouse said. On your feet, well, another crazy day. Drink the night away and forget about everything. This city desert makes you feel so cold. It's got so many people, but it's got no soul. And it's taking you so long. You used to think that it was so easy. You used to say that.
Linda Lopate, host of Linda Lopate at Large, weekdays at 1 p.m. I want to encourage my listeners to become Lopate at Large WBAI buddies. You can become a buddy, a sustaining BAI member, for as little as $10 a month. Please go to Give2, that's the number 2, give2wbai.org, or call 516-620-3602. And thank you.